Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. It simply amazes me that we have already gotten to Thursday. Every day that I get a little older, and I do that every day, I can't help referring back to Kurt Vonnegut in Slaughterhouse 5. You know, the whole Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time, pooty wheat kind of thing. And that's kind of where I am. The weeks fly by, the years fly by, it all flies by. And it blows my tiny, tiny mind. It's astonishing to me to consider my 12-year-old daughter walks in the door, and I'm like, hey, aren't you supposed to be, like, you know, tiny, you know, holding the... And I know it's almost cliché-ish, but it is oh so true. And so, you know, so too with the situation in America. That also is one of those things where you look up and, you know, where's the time gone? The weeks go by... The days go by, the years go by. I mean, I guess I was coming into my real adulthood during the Clinton administration, and things were good. Things were very, very good. We were we had prosperity. We had hope. We were, you know, we were looking toward the 21st century, and we were talking about, and the reason I'm doing all this is I heard a phrase last night that was, you know, it Billy Pilgrimed me, just whack. Right in that, you know, just threw me back in time. I heard the phrase, peace dividend. Do you remember the peace dividend? I remember the peace dividend. That was the America we were going to create once we didn't have to fool with the Cold War anymore. That was the America we were going to create, you know, once we weren't required to constantly build nuclear missiles to, you know, hit Minsk 982 times. That was the money we were going to have to really make America America. Again. And I heard that phrase peace dividend last night, and it was almost enough to make me want to weep. Peace dividend, my foot. There was no peace dividend. Oh, you know, Clinton, for the first time in ages and ages and ages, balanced the budget. Helped make this a country that was on solvent financial footing, but, you know, it is one of the curses of the American political process that what one genius does, one idiot can undo. It's heartbreaking. I remember all that talk about a bridge to the 21st century. And then today I'm cruising around looking over at WD40.com. And I see the headline, you know, my eyes are crossing. Bush insists outsourcing to India has its benefits. Bush insists outsourcing to India has its benefits. This is the text. I'm reading straight from it. Dateline, Washington. This is from the San Jose Mercury News, Washington Bureau. To people in Silicon Valley and around the country concerned about the outsourcing of jobs to India, President Bush on Wednesday offered something to make the practice more palatable. Pizza. It's just one of the U.S. products that India's rapidly growing middle class is developing an appetite for, Bush said in a speech to the Asia Society as he prepares for a trip to India and Pakistan next month. While acknowledging the individual trauma of Americans who lose jobs when companies move operations abroad, Bush said India's economic growth is an overall plus for the U.S. economy. Now, here's the quote. Take your Pepto-Bismol, do whatever it is you do, pop the first couple of buttons off so ripping your clothes off and running naked screaming around the room will be a little easier. You know, whatever it is you do. Quote, India's middle class is buying air conditioners, kitchen appliances, and washing machines, and a lot of them from American companies like GE and Whirlpool and Westinghouse. And that means their job base is growing here in the United States. Younger Indians are acquiring a taste for pizzas from Domino's Pizza Hut. Today, India's consumers associate American brands with quality and value, and this trade is creating opportunity at home. It is true that a number of Americans have lost jobs because companies have shifted operations to India, and losing a job is traumatic. It's difficult. It puts a strain on our families. But protectionist policies won't do us any good. You know, the pizza. Pizza. We've traded manufacturing jobs, computer programming jobs, code writing jobs to Pakistan and India for pizza. Pizza! Pizza. You know, that little laundry list of Westinghouse and GE and Whirlpool. You'll notice that Maytag's not listed in his little laundry list. None of them are U.S. brands anymore. Well, GE is. I mean, you know, they're one of the number one defense contractors in the entire freaking United States. World, even. But Maytag's not in that list. Remember, how long ago was it that the Chinese bought Maytag? It's heartbreaking. And this is, please understand, there's a point to all of this. This is no different. This is no different whatsoever when his daddy went to the grocery store during the 1992 presidential campaign and was absolutely fascinated with that little barcode scanning thingy. And it just, this entire family is disconnected from reality. There's nothing whatsoever that's real about them. They don't know America. They don't care about America. And they will sell America out at the first available opportunity. I mean, we're seeing that. You knew I'd get around to it, didn't you? We're seeing that with the Ports deal. Oh, we're finding out lots about the Bush family with the Ports deal. I got some information for you here a little bit later in the program that I don't know if you've seen it or not. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But I think you will, at the very least, find it interesting about this Ports business. And a question or two, just for the sheer unmitigated hell of it, a question or two. All this talk about, Dubai state-controlled DP world. Right? State-controlled DP world. Is it just me, or does state-controlled... Well, that's communism, ain't it? I mean, that ain't nothing we want nothing to do with, are it? We don't want no communists running our ports. Oh, God, it's heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. Well, you know the phone number, I assume. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. Learn it, know it, use it. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it is. Welcome back. So, we've got Dear Leader lost in the wilds of the pizza parlor. the pizza parlor, for God's sakes. We're all going to be okay in America because... Hey, wait a minute. The Indians have developed a taste for pizza? Now, I'm not... No. This is not religiously based or any kind of any of that sort of thing. But I got a question. Is it all veggie pizzas? This is India. So, I mean, I'm guessing it's not the, you know, the pepperoni and mushroom that the Little Caesars, you know, $2 for $5 or no. I mean, I get, yeah, well, okay, you know, so it's all vegetarian pizzas. I mean, Dear Leader might not be lying this time. But we're going to make up our trade deficit. We're going to make up our it's not a trade deficit. We're going to make up our brain drain on pizza? And I guess we're not offering 30 minutes or less from L.A. to Lahore, are we? Jesus. Domino's. Pizza Hut. But that's, you know, why should we be surprised that, you know, that's his plan for American success in India, when after all, that's his plan for American success in America. We're going to get rid of the manufacturing jobs. What the hell? Then we'll just replace them. Remember, do you remember, I talked at the top of the show about how we, the days and the months and the weeks slide into each other. Do you remember, honest to God, do you remember how he said that the Bush administration wanted to reclassify... Wanted to reclassify a job at Mickey D's, a job at Pizza Hut, a job at Domino's, a job at Little Caesars. The Bush Labor Department, Elaine Chao, wife of Mitch McConnell, wanted to reclassify those jobs as manufacturing jobs. Do you remember that? Or has it all just slid into the past? Just one sleazy incident after another. I remember. You know, one expert in this story, I'll get to some other stuff, but this one just, you know, God bless him over at WD40.com, this one just made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Henry Rowan, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution in Palo Alto, California, said economic growth doesn't exactly balance the drawbacks of outsourcing. And certainly there's some positives and some negatives. The net is a little tricky. He's the author of a book called Making It, The Rise of Asia in Information Technologies. He says, the consumer benefits from all of this, but there's an impact. There's an impact. You know, I hate to break it to these smart people, but when you don't have a job, it makes it even tougher to order a damn pizza. But maybe I'm just absolutely sprayed roach crazy. I mean, well, maybe that's it. You know, once we've all got a job making pizza, we take the leftover pizza at home at night and put food on our families that way. Great God in heaven. Pizza. President Bush on Wednesday offered something to make the practice of outsourcing more palatable. Pizza. Does it make you crazy? Is this just me? Am I the only one who hears of George Bush offering Americans pizza in exchange for their jobs? And can't help thinking of poor little Marie Antoinette. What? The peasants don't have... The peasants, they do not have the bread? Ah, well, let them eat the cake! Detached bastards. Oh, and let's see. The port story that just goes on and on and on, and the little wing nuts are spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning, and can't quite decide whether or not it's all right to call George Bush's Arab masters at the United Arab Emirates communists or not. I mean, state owned. I thought we hated state owned. I mean, we're all bent out of shape. The Bush administration is, hell, they're inoculating in Central America over state owned in Venezuela, aren't they? Well, you know, some pigs are equal, but some pigs are more... All pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than others, right? Orwell fans? State-owned in Cuba? Bad. State-owned in Vietnam? Good. State-owned in... China? Good. State-owned in Dubai? Good. It's just if it's state-owned in Cuba or Venezuela, bad. Bad, 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 bad. Because it just so happens, you know, whether you like him or you hate him, Fidel Castro has a way of calling George Bush out for what George Bush is. Street punk. Thug. That's all. Just a punk. Just, you know, a mugger on a side street. Our entire economy has been mugged by a dude who never held a job in his life. This never delivered a pizza, for Christ's sakes. And he is destroying America. He is selling... This is something I was made aware of last night by a person in the Tom Hartman chat room who also posts over at Daily Kos. At Tom Hartman, she is Lady Liberty. Apparently, at Kos, she is Hummingbird. After all of the Dick Cheney stuff, and by the way, there's a fun thing called quailhuntingschool.com. If you got absolutely nothing to do, you can go quail hunting at quailhunting.com on your computer. And you can get a certificate of completion. I've got mine. This certifies that Bob Kincaid has successfully completed the quail hunting course without shooting Harry too much. Virtual quail hunting at quailhuntingschool.com. You will enjoy the heck out of it. But, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit. Talk with you. I don't talk to you. I talk with you. I want to talk with you a little bit about what Hummingbird over at Kos found out when something in the back of her mind wouldn't quit tickling, you know, like that little itch at the back of your throat, that just bothers you until you finally, you know, figure out what the hell it is, and what the hell it is here is. Those really rich dudes who control the state. You know, when you say state-owned at Dubai, what you mean is owned by a sheikh. Because truly, it's very much like Louis XIV, you know, l'état c'est moi. The state, Dubai, is the sheikhs. So when you talk about state-owned, what you mean is sheikh-owned. And I think it might do us some good to have a look at just what kind of guy we're dealing with in the sheiks who run the United Arab Emirates. Okay, let's do that. Now, of course, you know the phone number. The phone number is 877-443-2366. Email is bob@headonradio.com. It's easy. If you want to get involved, jump right in. Be fine by me. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Say.
Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute, it sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenu oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductocarcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Want to just sit and listen to that for a minute? Nah, we better not. Let's get back to the program. Let's see. Well, I tell you what. Here, this business with a little backgrounder on our buddies, our pals. Let's face it, George Bush's masters in the Arab world in Dubai. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But right now, we've got our buddy Jeff from PA with us. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good, you?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
Hello, Bob.
Oh, no. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Wait a second. Are you there? Can I? Okay.
I lost you, Bob.
Stand
by. Where you're at.
Let's try it again. Hey, Jeff, you there?
Try again?
Yeah, are you there?
Still can't hear you, Bob.
Dadgummit. Please, God, don't let this be one of those nights. This is frustrating. Well, we'll go on. Bear with me when Agnes gets in here, because I'm flying solo right now, basketball practice night, you know. I got to figure out what the heck is happening here. That button's up. That's right. Yeah, everything else. I can't see that anything's wrong on my end. Hey, Jeff, try me back, buddy, would you? I'm gonna drop the line here. Let's try it one more time. Maybe it's just a bum connection. One never knows. All right, moving back to what I was talking about. Hummingbird over at Coast. Lady Liberty on the Tom Hartman chat room. She writes, I kept having this niggling feeling that I had heard this a while back, and I had because MSNBC had reported on it on September the 5th, 2003. It being fact that the Emir of Dubai, the head of the family that owns Dubai Ports, is an associate and, wait for it, hunting buddy. We're just kind of up to our eyeballs in hunting buddies right now, aren't we? A hunting buddy of, that's right, Osama bin Laden. Let's try Jeff one more time. Hey, Jeff, are you there? Jeff.
Hello?
Hello, Jeff. Oh, this is just weird. No, it's not. Dadgummit. Jeff, apparently we have some sort of weird little gremlin in the system, and I frankly don't know what it is. Wait a second. One more time. Hey, Jeff. Are you there? No. Nope.
Hello?
Nope. Okay. Well, this is one of those crawl around on the floor moments, and frankly, I don't have time to do that, and I'm not going to subject you to it. But anyway, what I wanted to share with you out of this, hunting buddies with Osama bin Laden. And the story that's cited comes from cooperativeresearch.org. And this is a quote, after the Taliban takes control of the area around Kandahar, Afghanistan in September 1994, prominent Persian Gulf state officials and businessmen, including high-ranking United Arab Emirates and Saudi government ministers, such as Saudi intelligence minister Prince Turki Al-Faisal, frequently secretly fly into Kandahar on state and private jets for hunting expeditions. That's from the Los Angeles Times. On November 18th, 2001, General Wayne Downing, Bush's former national director for combating terrorism, says, quote, they would go out and see Osama, spend some time with him, talk with him, you know, live out in the tents, eat the simple food, engage in falconing. Wow, you know, I mean, falconry. That's impressive. Engage in falconing, some other pursuits, ride horses. One noted visitor is Sheikh Mohammed ibn Rashid Al Maktoum, United Arab Emirates Defense Minister and Crown Prince for the Emirate of Dubai. My heavenly days. While there, some develop ties to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and give them money. Both bin Laden and Taliban leader Mullah Omar sometimes participate in these hunting trips. Former U.S. and Afghan officials suspect that the dignitaries' outbound jets may also have smuggled out Al-Qaeda and Taliban personnel. Again, the 18th of November, 2001, Los Angeles Times. On one occasion, the U.S. will decide not to attack bin Laden with a missile because he's falconing. Oh, God. Because he's falconing with important members of the United Arab Emirates royal family. According to Wikipedia, Sheikh Mohammed ibn Rashid Al Maktoum is the prime minister of the entirety of the UAE and recently became the emir of Dubai after the former emir Maktoum bin Rashid Al Maktoum died of a heart attack in Queensland, Australia. You okay with this? I'm not okay with this. George Tenet confirmed all of what you just heard in his testimony before the 9/11 Commission. Question. Fielding, who made that decision? Tenet, I don't have a recollection of the uniqueness of the intelligence. Oh, I hate Washington speak. The intelligence in question at the time, I can go back and provide that for you. In fact, I'd like to go back and try and package up all the data at my disposal when we were thinking about these issues. Talking about not missiling the camp. It's also a question, Tenet says, I believe, as to whether bin Laden was inside or outside the camp. Fielding, of course. Tenet, the complicating issue in this whole thing and whether he was there or not. So there's a second complicating factor here. The third complicating factor here is you might have wiped out half the royal family in the United Arab Emirates in the process, which I'm sure entered into everybody's calculation in all of this. Well, now you understand, don't you? There's money involved. Big money involved. Lots of money involved for the Bush family. And, of course, a Bush would never, ever, ever cross his master. Didn't know about the deal until a day or so ago. Oh, my aching back. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I resent being treated like, you know, just another ignorant American. And that's what this is all. It's there. You know, just like Harry Whittington went hunting with Dick Cheney, the emir of the UAE went hunting with Osama bin Laden. Apparently there were no 28-gauge shotguns involved. Falcons this time through. You know, the sport of kings. God almighty. Let's see here. What do we got going on? Oh, never mind. You know, this is just a night of weirdness. It started out so nicely. But everything that I just shared with you, you can find over at Daily Kos. You can find it there, Hummingbird's Diary. Hummingbird's Diary. You can also go to a lot of the same thing was also noted at HuffingtonPost.com, Michael Smirkanish's blog. He writes, by now we've all heard that two of the 9/11 hijackers were citizens of the United Arab Emirates and that the vast majority of money from the attacks flowed through Dubai, but the past role of the UAE in fostering terrorism is even more direct than currently being discussed. A simple consultation of the index of the 665-page 9/11 Commission report yields six references to the UAE, most of which can be found on page 138. And like I said, HuffingtonPost.com, Michael Smirkanish, S-M-E-R-C-O-N-I-S-H. And he lays it out just like Hummingbird did. Ultimately, he says, so there you have it. A year after bin Laden served formal notice of his intention to kill Americans anyhow, anywhere, the CIA appropriately tracked his whereabouts and was prepared to take him out, but was denied the opportunity because of the presence of high-level UAE officials who were socializing with the head of Al-Qaeda. Worse, when the United States alerted the UAE of their displeasure with these contacts, the UAE's response was to tip off bin Laden and further thwart our efforts to kill him. The country we're now entrusting to manage the gateways to our nation is the same leadership that denied us a key opportunity to kill bin Laden 2 years before September 11th. Bigotry? No, just good old-fashioned American street smarts. Sometimes you could just cry. You could. You could just cry. Tell you what, I'm going to fire up a little break here, and when we come back, hopefully, I'll have figured out whatever the heck is wrong with the phone system, which ordinarily works like a charm. Well, you know, teach me to count on stuff. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Said she was good. And he can see no reason, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be sure? Oh, 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 oh.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays. I want to shoot. Ooh. The whole day down. Types to a waiting world. A mother feels so shocked. Father's world is rocked. And the thoughts turn to their own little girl. Sweet 16 ain't that beachy keen. Now it ain't so neat to admit defeat. They can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reasons do you need? Oh, 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 oh.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Hi, I'm Bruce Hornsby. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it certainly is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend his time, or her time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your kids to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that they really like, the one that really clicks for them. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by NENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
right, welcome back. That was a longer than usual break. And it was a longer than usual break for a very particular reason. I was trying to find out what in the world is wrong with the phone system. Because, as it stands on any ordinary evening, when something goes wrong with the phone system, I'm kind of responsible for it.
But we're working on it.
And I don't know if we're going to be able to take this call or not, but Peter is with us. Peter, can you hear me?
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
Oh, sweet Jesus, I'm so glad.
I can't hear you.
Oh, you can't hear me. Oh, don't tease me that way.
I wish I could hear you.
I was only
going to say two things. If you guys could hear me, the UAE gave $1 million to the Bush Library. They founded the Presidential Library at Texas A&M University. So that's one payoff. And the other thing that ticked me off today was Bush made the remark, the American public shouldn't be concerned about the security because, quote, my, end quote, government has thoroughly checked this out. My government, the depth to which that is flawed is amazing. It is not that brain donkey's government. It is our government, for the people, by the people. And I hope you get the phone line fixed. I hope you guys can hear me. And I love you guys. And I was dancing a minute ago, but, you know, you stopped the music. Oh, well, I'll see you later.
All
bye.
Right. Bye. Okay, somebody let Peter know in the chat room that see, I can hear you guys. You can't hear me. There is something wrong with the input into our highfalutin megaphone hospo. And we'll probably fix it after the show. So I tell you what, you can hear, you guys can, we can still do this. Okay? You can get your thoughts out. We just can't dialogue. So let's go to Jeff in PA. Honey, let's go to... Yes. He can hear...
We can hear you, but you can't hear us, so hold on.
Okay. Let's go to Jeff in PA. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Bob. I wanted to say, I called last night, but unfortunately Ben beat me to the punch. I wanted to point out the story with Sophie Scholl, but for those people out there that have an understanding of White Rose Society, there's a movie that we really need to support that's being distributed around the country that tells a great story about the last 5 days of her life, and it's called Sophie Scholl, The Final Days. And it's opening in New York, has opened in New York, and we'll be playing in, big cities around the country. So anybody that's got the chance to go see it, I hope you all do. I'm not sure whether I'm going to drive to New York or wait until it gets to Pittsburgh, but one way or another, I'll see it. And that's about it for tonight. Take care. Hope you figure out the phone problems.
I do, too. Thanks, Jeff. Bye now. Oh, this is just zany, and the phones are ringing off the hook because I don't know. Maybe it's better this way. you guys talk, I talk, and we get okay. Let's see.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay, who have we got, Agnes?
No. But we can't.
Yeah, if oh.
Hold on.
Is there someone on line one, dear?
Rick.
Rick is on line one. Okay.
We're using Comrex.
Okay.
Hold on, Rick. Bob's going to put you on. Hold on.
Okay. Who's on which, dear?
Huh?
Who's on which line, dear?
Ed's on one. Rick's on two.
Okay. Let's go to Rick.
Hold on, Rick.
Okay, Rick, now that you're on hold. Don't, not yet. Not yet. He can hear me on hold. Now that you're on hold, Rick, the situation is, when you hear the thing click over, start talking. I just can't dialogue with you. I can hear you. You can't hear me. That makes it a little bit complicated, but that's the way it's apparently going to work until such time as I can figure out what the heck's going on. Let's go to Rick now in Panama City.
Yeah, how you doing, Bob? I know you can't, talk to me, so
warm water and razor
blade. Well, I just wanted to help with the phone system. See, I was asking Agnes, I don't know if I can or not, but what kind of phone system you guys have. I don't know if you have the capability to reboot the phone or not.
Yeah, we're going
to. And also check any patch panels to see if anything's popped out. I would probably develop an Echo.
What kind of
phone? Yeah, and I'm delayed as well. I would probably develop an Echo anyway if I tried to listen through a headset. So try that if you haven't tried it already. And if she said, I think she said it was a Comrick phone system, if there's some way you could post that where I could read the exact spelling, I'll start researching it on Google for you. Hi, everybody. Have a good time. And I'll call back later if you get it going. Nice talking with you, I think, Bob.
Yeah, we got all of that. I tell you what, we're going to knock off for an extended break, long enough for me to try to tinker and figure things out. Crank up some music, Agnes. This is the extended dance party portion of the program. Oh God! Only me. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We'll be right back. Or is it me, the criminal in the V? You never pretend to be nothing other. deeper than a
make that look so good.
flag, stag, flaggle, brass, knack, and brass, brass, and brass. Okay, I think we got it fixed. It's a quarter after the hour. It's taken 20 minutes. I had to get the grass skirt out, run the bone through my nose, shake the rattles, say prayers in several different languages, light a little incense. I think we got it fixed. Anybody want to do experimental radio and see if Bob's actually got the telephone hickey working? You're welcome to. It's 877-443-2366. That's 877, the number 4, head on. Agnes looks, playing. Agnes looks at me and says, people are getting cranky with me. I apologize. I truly do. And when this thing is through the stratosphere, we'll have an engineer paid just sitting by. Okay. Here we go. Let's try this.
Hello.
Just tell me who it is. We don't have to write notes.
Hold on. We're just going to put you on. Hold on.
Hey. Okay. Let's see. Maybe we. Okay. Let's get all the buttons pushed.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We're working.
Are we working?
Yeah.
We're happy.
It sounds like a good thing. Yeah, I wanted to throw another thought out there. I'm pretty much a progressive radio junkie. I listen to everybody all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a guy call in to two different shows today from Arkansas that said he'd been in the Emirates for the past 10 years, working for one of the stables from the big families over there.
Oh, really?
And he said, everything is great over here. They treat us well, and everything is fine and dandy, and it's a great place to be, and I had to wonder, because he's living among the elite.
Mm-hmm.
So he's seeing one part of the world over there.
Well, it is. I mean, there's no getting around it, Rick. If you take a good look at it, I don't have a political science degree or anything, but the fact of the matter is, those people literally own the country.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure. What do you call it when somebody owns the country and makes up the laws out of his own head?
Well, that's sort of a dictatorship.
Or a tyranny.
Yeah.
And, we've got this notion, and I guess it's been forced on us by dint of American history or something, that, tyranny bad. That everybody's miserable in tyranny, or everybody's miserable under a dictatorship, or everybody's miserable in fascism. That ain't true.
No, the people in favor live life comfortably, and the rest suffer.
Yeah, I took my dad up to Cleveland Clinic. He had to have some, he's got better circulation than I've got at this point in time after what they did up there. And there's no xenophobia, and there's no racism or anything involved. But apparently, with some of those small Arab states over there, when you turn a certain age, you get this boatload of money. I mean, it's like the most incredible birthday present you ever got in your life. And the first thing they do is they come to Cleveland Clinic, and they get all worked up. I'm not kidding.
Well, I was going to throw another idea out there.
Okay.
And, most of the shows I listen to, they're you've got your regular callers, you got Jim and you got Bob and a few others on your show, and every show I listen to, you've got the same group of people that are calling in all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to see is maybe one or two nights, throw it out there and have all the people that listen but don't regularly call in. Give a shout out,
yeah,
and just tell us who you are and where you are, and let us know that there are other people out there that feel the same way we do.
Right, and the thing is, I know that to be true, Rick, because I know what the numbers are on the people who download, on the people who listen at RadioPower.org, and then the thing goes out into Usenet, and God only knows what kind of numbers that's drawn, because you really can't measure it.
Yeah, well, I know that there's a lot of us out there that feel the same way, but it would be a tremendous shot in the arm to you know, hear them actually get on the air and say who they are and where they are.
And for me, I mean, I want to create that opportunity. I promise this is not going to turn into last night's episode of Inside Baseball. but I want to create that opportunity for people simply because, and I'm not criticizing anybody else's style, but as far as I'm concerned, what we need on our side of the debate, Rick, is interchange and dialogue and conversation, and we need to be able to provide that opportunity for other people to get on and do that. You know, I don't think there's any doubt that I could sit. That's why I was so upset when the phones went down. I can sit and I can filibuster for 3 hours. It's not a problem. But I don't like it.
Yeah, it's no fun and it doesn't accomplish a lot.
I like the conversation.
Well, you know, one of the good things Mike Malloy does, I think he's done it a couple of times in the last couple of years, is, you know, anybody from 13 to 18.
Oh, I love his youth notes.
That's a great show. It really gives me hope that, you know, some of the younger folks out there are actually paying attention and they've got a good brain on their shoulders.
No, that's, you know, I think we're going to have one of our daughters in here answering the phones, and they called it school job shadowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's 12. She's old enough to figure out some of this stuff. We'll let her answer the phones for a night. And, you know, just let her see, you know, see what it is that goes on in here. They hear everything that happens. They just, they don't always get to sit and watch every night.
Yeah, well, you grew up on a farm. You start working at 10 years old.
Well, exactly, you know. And this isn't 4 o'clock in the morning and going out and handling cattle.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is answering the phone, so I think we should be able to pull it off. But, you know, if folks are out there, Rick, who haven't called before, I hope folks have figured out that, you know, I don't bite. We've never had a caller die on air, and it would be nice to get that kind of a thing going. That's part of the other process I was talking about last night with this whole front porch idea where we get – I had several emails saying, I want in on the front porch deal. And, you know, I think we'll make that happen. I don't know when, but I think it would be a lot of fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've lived enough places around the country that I've seen the situation where, you know, most people don't know their neighbors.
Yeah.
And that's a really sad thing to think about, because the way I grew up is, you know, all of my neighbors knew me, and you know, you scraped your elbow or cut your knee or whatever, you were in the kitchen getting a Band-Aid put on it. Didn't matter who it was. You know,
I think back to where I grew up. I think I could probably name every family in every home over the course of about, you know, 5 blocks.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got to get back to that, you know.
It would be nice.
Unless we understand we're a community, you know, we all rely upon one another.
Yeah, I'm kind of a weirdo, you know. I've got a smoker, and I smoke like pork shoulders and ribs and things like that. And when I do a mess of those, I put some on a plate. I take some to one neighbor. I take some to another neighbor, the other neighbor next door. And, you know, just, you know, trying to have that little, you know, sense of community. I don't want anybody to worship or anything. I just want to be nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
I know, you know, it matters to me that you're there. And that's this show, too, in a nutshell.
You got it.
It matters to me that folks will spend their time and share their thoughts. You know, a lot of the people who won't call will email, and I spend a significant portion of my day, Rick, answering emails.
Well, you know, there's no one who's more, I won't say antisocial, but not exactly a social animal than me. And, you know, it took me a bit of gumption to get up the nerve to call, but you know, I sort of consider you and Agnes, you know, part of the family now.
Well, we appreciate that, and that's the way we feel about the folks who spend their time with us. It would be, you know, somewhere down the road when it's all fabulously successful and we're just awash in money, we'll figure out the one place on planet Earth that is that's central to everybody and have a huge party. And I think it would just be such a blast.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, or, you know, preferably in the dead of winter somewhere warm. Hey, Rick, you have yourself a great evening, all right?
Take
care.
Have a good night.
And thanks for your help. Thank you very, very much. And let's just keep it rolling. You know, I'm grateful to have the phones back. Thank you, Jesus. CB is with us. Hey, CB, you're head on.
Hey, Uncle Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I just mostly called to giggle on the air and see if your phones were working again.
We're cooking, and I'm proud.
Yeah. Well, Rick mentioned about the lack of community and the people who were afraid to call, and might be a little bit of the network news we've had for so many years, where they teach us to be afraid of our shadows.
Well, yeah, and the network news has also told us to shut the hell up.
Yeah, and we've done a fine job of it. We've locked ourselves away from each other, so...
Well, you know, I think you can trace a lot of it to the advent of television in general. You know, once you've got that shimmering box in the corner talking at you, why should you go out in the yard and talk to your neighbor?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got someone fabulous and beautiful who'll talk to you. This is straight out of Fahrenheit 451. Did you ever read that book, Ray Bradbury?
No. I never did.
Well, it predicts a future where everyone, I mean, and we're getting to it where there are rooms that are have television screens on all four walls.
Oh, boy.
And you are in the middle of the production so that they can, you know, it's remember those, you know, those children's books you can buy, you know, the personalized for your child, you know, wherever the child's name would be, it's your kid's name. Well, it's like that, only television. And we're getting very close to that, and people become very antisocial as a result. And I don't like that.
No, I don't like it either. I don't have a TV set.
God bless you.
Thank you.
No, it's good for you. I remember early in the first incarnation of this show, we had a lady on. She was working in the Dennis Kucinich campaign, and she had started at one point something she called TV Turnoff Week, and had real success with it, where people just agreed to that, you know, physically unplug the TV, undo the cable, carry the thing out to the garage, and leave it there for a week, and see what happens inside your family. And she said the first two nights are riot. And they're just, it's like watching someone withdraw. But by the end of the week, there are serious questions as, you know, do we really need to bring this thing back in?
Yeah.
It's good for, you know, I've got friends who talk about, you know, someday being able to get off the grid. Well, that's part of the grid. You're off of it. And that's part of what makes you a little bit more real.
Well, I hope so. But I'm trying to figure out how to get into a cave in the mountains of China with broadband.
I'm not thinking you're getting Wi-Fi in there either.
No, I'm not getting Wi-Fi, but I just managed to get the cable modem, just barely. Out here in the country, there are some cable companies that are giving us hicks a connect. But if I moved like 3 feet further away from civilization than I am now,
mm-hmm.
I'd be out of luck.
I'm just curious, and I don't want you to give it away any information that you don't want to, but what's your nearest major town?
Major town?
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, Brookings, Oregon, or Crescent City, California, they're about equal distance away.
Okay.
I guess the biggest town nearby would be Eureka, California, but that's about 80 miles away, I think.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm surprised you've got cable out that far. I mean,
Well, I kind of was, too, and grateful because, you know, I wanted to have the Internet connection. But
right. We live on the other side of the New River Gorge, and our cable company can't find this side of the river.
Ooh.
I mean, we've got, you know, the regular stuff, but we can't, you know, to have broadband through cable, not going to happen. They've promised us for 5 years that it was 1 year away.
So is it over your phone lines?
No.
Or satellite?
Phone line. We've got DSL, and then what you're hearing right now is actually going out over a fractional T1 line.
Whatever the heck that is.
Yeah, exactly. All I know is I push the button and it goes.
Right, that's...
Yeah, the rest of it, to me, the rest of it's magic.
Yes, and that's pretty much what's happening with me and my fancy-fangled computer. I came into a tiny drop of money a little while back, and I quickly got myself a state-of-the-art computer, you know, so that I could not be a dinosaur for another few months.
Right, so that it would hopefully not be obsolete, until like June.
Right, exactly. And now pretty much I just click on whatever icon seems the most friendly to me, and my computer works. Lord, help me if I have a problem like you guys did, because I don't know what to do then.
Well, I was in sweat condition, Alpha CB. It was terrible.
I was giggling about it. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. It was pretty funny around here too, because you know, Daddy, we haven't heard you use those words in a while. You didn't hear me use them.
I loved it. You kept coming back on with thump, 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 you know, and then suddenly music again. I was cracking up. It was great.
Well, it was either that or open the mic. I could either open the mic and thump, or I could open the mic and scream. That or, you know, just, you know, mother. Yeah. But, you know, thank God it works. So good to hear from you, CB.
Yeah, take care, Bob.
I'm going to take a quick break and come back. And I hope we'll talk with you again soon.
Me too.
Bye now.
Bye.
It is time for our Cup of Joe report. Joe was dealing with a nasty little case of laryngitis, so he dropped me a note telling me to run the show from a couple of nights ago. So that's what we're going to do. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I just learned today that Bruce McPherson, California's Secretary of State and a typical Republican hack, has certified Diebold voting machines for use in California. These machines lie at the heart of the Republican plan to give the illusion of democracy while secretly destroying it. As usual with Republican strategy, this decision was made after hours on the Friday before a three-day weekend. You know, sometimes it's hard for me to figure out just what to talk about in these reports because there's so much going on and so much disinformation out there that it's impossible for me to put it all into 90 seconds of talk. It's gotten to the point where reading the news is like looking at a train wreck. I mean, you don't want to look, but you just can't help it. And this news was just one more item in a daily dose of bad news for all Americans, even the right-wingers who think they're benefiting from it. A lot of us on the left are working hard to try and prevent the total breakdown of this country. If things continue as they have, there will come a time when no political process will be available to us, only desperate measures by desperate people. I don't want that to happen, and neither do millions of others. And I think the only way we can keep this from happening is to make sure that we at least have free, fair, and accurate elections. And in order to do that, we have to be always on the alert so that we can shine a light on this corrupt and criminal behavior. Diebold, their slogan says, never sleeps, and neither should we. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
It's only taken half the program to get things normalized. Don't kid yourself. I know who made that phone problem. That had nothing whatsoever to do with me or Agnes. I know Agent Fred's work when I see it and hear it. Absolutely.
You're not blaming Agnes for this.
I said Agent Fred, dear.
I know, but you mentioned my name.
Right. I said it's neither your fault nor my fault. Yeah. Agent Fred. They've got the ability to screw with our equipment. Sure. Conspiracy theories. Tough. Let's see. Let's move on to something more. Not that. Oh, yeah. I like it. Yeah, I like this one. From the Washington Post. From today's Washington Post, no less. The defense for Scooter Libby is really cranking up now. You know, back before Dick Cheney blew away Harry. You know, there's a joke in there somewhere. Something to do with when Harry met Sally. When Harry got shot by Dick. We'll get to that later. We were talking about Scooter Libby's The Cheney Made Me Do It defense. That he outed a CIA agent who was actively undercover investigating Iranian and Iraqi nuclear activities, particularly Iranian ones, since they're the ones that have nuclear activities and the Iraqis kind of didn't. We were talking about that, and it was really, you know, it was catching on. And I guess, you know, there's a conspiracy theory for you. Dick winged Harry to get people to quit talking about the fact that Scooter Libby was going to roll over on him and drop the dime. Well, at any rate, now that Harry Gate is apparently concluded, it's been declared a non-story by the professional media. Another story comes out, this by Carol Leonig. Carol Leonig of the Washington Post. Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff was, get this, this is his defense. This is the defense in court. Was so consumed with pressing national security concerns in 2003 and 2004 that he undoubtedly forgot details of conversations he had about undercover CIA operative Valerie Plame, his defense lawyers argue in new court filings. You got that? Oh, this one could really go far. Where'd you get that TV set you're holding under your arms and running away with out of that alley? Dick Cheney gave it to me? and then later on he goes to trial and he says, I had pressing concerns about my power bill and my water bill, you know, domestic security concerns in my home, and I obviously forgot some of the details and gave the wrong information to the officer about where I got that television set. That's what this is. Attorneys for I. Lewis Scooter Libby insist that they need hundreds of pages of classified daily briefings prepared for President Bush to show that Libby did not intentionally lie about discussing Plame with reporters, as prosecutors allege. They contend that he was preoccupied with more serious matters when the conversations took place and when investigators questioned him months later. Quote, one of the central themes of Mr. Libby's defense at trial will be that any misstatements he made during his FBI interviews or grand jury testimony were not intentional, but rather the result of confusion, mistakes, or faulty memories, the attorneys wrote in a courtroom document filed late Tuesday. Given the urgent national security issues that commanded Mr. Libby's attention, it is understandable that he may have forgotten or, here's one of those fun words, misremembered relatively less significant events such as outing CIA agents. This is called graymailing in the legal terminology of the highfalutin criminal defense world. When your client is a dirty, filthy, rotten, dirt-eating, Republican member of a corrupt administration, you graymail the prosecution. I need that presidential daily briefing on toenail clippings from September the 22nd, 2002, because that's going to be key to triggering my memory of whether or not I misremembered the lie that I told the FBI in 2005. And the call goes out from the prosecutor down to the Department of Justice and to the White House. You know, we need the toenail clipping briefing. That is graymailing. In other words, attempting to work and attempting to so thoroughly overload the defense or the prosecution with the defense's request for production, that the prosecution itself doesn't have time to really put its case fully together, and then the defense, in putting on its case, can sit there and play Parcheesi with all of these documents that have been disclosed, and claim that, well, you know, look, I mean, I've got, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I've got a stack here the size of 6 Manhattan telephone books, and this is what I. Lewis Scooter Libby was doing, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, not for me. God knows, not for himself, because he is a selfless man. Oh, he's a selfless man. He didn't do it for the money. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, he did it for you. He did it for you, ladies and gentlemen. He counted George Bush's toenail clippings to save you from the terrorists. That's how it's going to go. The filing also indicated that Libby, in his first grand jury appearance in early 2004, apologized, saying his memories could be inaccurate because he read 100 to 200 pages of material a day and usually worked from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. When in God's name did he have time to write that novel about the little baby prostitute put in the cage with the bear? Betcha he can remember every detail of what that bear did to that little girl, but he can't remember whether or not he told a lie about outing a CIA agent. Not to worry, the trial's not going to go down until 2007, well after the 2006 midterm elections in which we really, really desperately need to shine a light on the filth that is the Republican Party. Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald argued in court filings last week that Libby's lawyers were attempting to derail the prosecution with a breathtaking request for nearly a year's worth of presidential daily briefs. So what did I tell you? They're graymailing. Now, if a man is innocent, in our system, he doesn't have to prove it. He can sit back and let the prosecution put on its evidence. He doesn't even have to take the stand. The prosecution can rest, the defense can rest, and the defense can say, hey, look, you saw the crap they put forward. My guy doesn't have to say a blessed word to you. You know it's garbage. However, if your client has gone before the grand jury and lied like a Persian rug, you need a stack of presidential daily briefs as tall as 6 Manhattan phone directories. You don't need it, you must have it. Because simply letting something like facts and the truth get before a jury will barbecue your butt in molasses. See how they work? I've said time after time after time, we're talking about vampires here. We're talking about things that cannot allow the light of the sweet light, the sunshine of a broad day to shine upon them. These are operators in the night and the dark and the shadows. And truth is a kind of light that they cannot abide. Because it is understandable that he may have forgotten or misremembered relatively less significant events, such as outing a CIA agent. He only outed one CIA agent. I mean, it's not like we're talking about 2 or 3 dozen CIA agents that he outed. Just one. Just one. The one CIA agent who happened to be the wife of the man who took a sharp little needle and right into the big hot air balloon that was George Bush's reason for slaughtering 100,000 Iraqi civilians. You know, Libby didn't even work for George Bush. Libby worked for Dick Cheney. What's he need the presidential daily briefings for? But this, you must understand, is what you're dealing with when you start fooling around with a gang of people for whom the truth is poison. Right? Right. Oh, and let me move along to one other fun little thing, because I've got a soundbite for you I want you to hear. Do you remember? It wasn't all that long ago that Bill O'Reilly went on the Today Show. It was November the 30th, 2005. We had it for you right here on this show. November 30th, 2005. Bill O'Reilly called those who were calling. He said that anyone advocating the immediate withdrawal of the United States from Iraq, he said that anyone who wanted the United States to immediately pull out from Iraq, this was after the Jack Murtha stuff, he said that those people were pinheads, and he said that they were Hitler appeasers. He said this on the Today Show. Flip, flop, flip, flop, flip, flop. Well, he flipped, and now he's flopped. This is a segment from his broadcast on the radio, the thing that passes for a radio show that he does, from 2 days ago. Check it out.
Some disturbing report out of Iraq, and it's more important than it first appears. The governor of, or the mayor of Karbala, which is a town in the south part of Iraq, Shiite-controlled, has banned any further government dealings with the American military in his province, saying that they're not behaving well. Now, it's a small little thing, but I picked up on it, because here's the essential problem in Iraq. There are so many nuts in the country, so many crazies, that we can't control them. And we're never going to be able to control them.
Wait for it.
So the only solution to this is to hand over everything to the Iraqis as fast as humanly possible. Because we just can't control these crazy people. They're just all over the place. And that was the big mistake about America. It was the crazy people underestimation. We did not know how to deal with them, still don't. but they're just all over the place. And
got that? There's, I could take this 16 different ways. Let's see. Let's start with this one. Bill O'Reilly is now a pinhead Hitler appeaser. Right? Because that's what he said. Anybody who wanted to immediately withdraw from Iraq, he said that on November 30th, 2005, anyone who wants to immediately withdraw from Iraq is a pinhead Hitler appeaser. And now he are one. Get out of there as fast as humanly possible. That's what he says. Because, and I love this. And here's the essential problem in Iraq. There are so many nuts in the country, so many crazies, that we can't control them. You idiot. Doofus. Now, Mavis, he's calling Bill O'Reilly names. Come quick. He is. We're never going to be able to control them, so the only solution to this is hand over everything to the Iraqis as fast as humanly possible. Because we can't control these crazy people. Now, the triggering story for all this that he mentions at the front end of his little blab fest there is this story, and I had it in the stack. I haven't even gotten around to it for days now. But yeah, the mayor of Karbala said he was no longer, and other mayors in Iraq have done the same thing. He is forbidden city government to have anything to do with the American forces. Why? Well, among other things, they bring dogs into their mosques. You know, and that you got to ask, you know, the Colonel who's this or whatever he is, would you bring dogs into a Catholic church in Illinois? Would you bring your dogs into a Baptist church in Alabama? Probably not. But they are so culturally clueless, you know, woof, yeah, come on, Fido. And they bring their dogs into the mosques. And, you know, that offends their sensibilities. Probably means that you got to do some sort of the cleansing ritual on the whole mosque once it's been defiled like that. And the last I checked, aren't you supposed to take your shoes off? And they go tramping in there with their big old combat boots stomping all over creation. You know, you kind of... But you see, the mayor of Karbala is crazy for cutting off contact with disrespectful American commanders as a result. Oh, I want to hear it again, Agnes. Just listen. I'm sorry. I know you don't listen to these freaks, but once in a while, you got to kind of take the little glass and put it up to the door there, and because you don't want to get in, you don't want to actually spend any time listening to these creeps, because it'll make you feel like you have to be ritually cleansed. But let's O'Reilly again.
Some of a disturbing report out of Iraq, and it's more important than it first appears. The governor of, or the mayor of Karbala, which is a town in the south part of Iraq, Shiite-controlled, has banned any further government dealings with the American military in his province, saying that they're not behaving well. Now, it's a small little thing, but I picked up on it, because here's the essential problem in Iraq. There are so many nuts in the country, so many crazies, that we can't control them. And we're never going to be able to control them. So the only solution to this is to hand over everything to the Iraqis as fast as humanly possible. Because we just can't control these crazy people. They're just all over the place. And that was the big mistake about America. It was the crazy people underestimation. We did not know how to deal with them, still don't. But they're just all over the place.
Now, understand, we know that American troops have taken dogs into mosques, this kind of thing. But in this particular instance, just to give you the background, like I said, I've had it in the stack for days, just didn't feel like fooling with it. It's just another day of us treating them, treating the WOGs like some sort of subhumans. And O'Reilly says, well, you know, they're all crazy. We'll never be able to control the crazy people. Well, here's what made the crazy people crazy. What it turns out is the mayor of Karbala wanted an apology from the U.S. because U.S. soldiers brought dogs inside the governor's office building. Just stomped right in like they owned the place. And it was taken as an insult by the governing council there in Karbala. Among other things, the American soldiers blocked roads leading to the governor's office and wouldn't let members of the governing council and the governor himself park cars outside their own damn building. But what have I said? Time after time after... Scratch him. You don't even have to draw blood. Just scratch him. Scratch a little of the filth and mud and slime off of a right-winger. And what do you get? You find the bigotry. You find the hate. You find the race hate. You know, the... My God. If yes, dear.
I think one of the key factors there was we can't control them. What
Precisely.
Happened to democracy?
Right. No,
I thought we were giving them. First, it was.
Yeah, but see, they're bigots.
No, first it was we were after weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
That didn't turn up. Then we were bringing Iraqi freedom.
And then jelly donuts.
And now we can't control them. I didn't think that freedom and democracy required someone to control you.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm saying, Agnes, dear. You know, you don't have to control someone that you feel is a human being. But these right-wingers, these hate-mongers, these, face it, you know, look, come to terms with it. You decent people, you liberals, you progressives, you Democrats, Greens, what have you, you live in a country where, you know, at any given time you can look around, and if you see a Bush voter, you are looking at a racist. Okay? Bigots. Prejudiced to the bone. It is what it is what it is. I'm not name-calling. I am merely setting out a fact. From the first shot that was fired in Georgia's dirty, illegal little war, this has been an exercise in blatant, rampant racism. We can't control them. We just can't control these crazy people. You know, O'Reilly's one of these NRA-supporting types. Can you imagine if some soldier busted down his door and brought some snarling animal in to his little multi-million-dollar compound, how he would behave? Would he suddenly become one of those crazy people? Well, of course, O'Reilly's white. So he couldn't possibly be crazy. You're only crazy if you happen to be somewhere else and some soldier bowls down your door and brings a snarling animal in at you. Then you're crazy for resenting that. I don't like acknowledging that a whole bunch of my fellow Americans, if they are indeed still my fellow Americans, I don't like having to acknowledge that they are racist to the bone. It gives me no pleasure. But I can't come to another suitable conclusion. I can't come to another rational conclusion. How about you? The phones work now. Feel free to chime in if you're so inspired. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. Email's easy too. bob@headonradio.com. And I am Bob, and this is Head On. Just born tonight, face down in a memory, but feeling all right. So who does your past belong to today, baby? You don't say nothing when you're feeling this way. Girls in the bars thinking, who is this guy? But they don't think nothing when they're telling you lies. You look so careless when they're shooting that bull. Don't you know heartaches are heroes when they're pocket.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Okay, fingers are crossed. Nah, everything's going to be fine. We're going to do... that was just a momentary glitch earlier in the evening, and I apologize for being so unprofessional about it, but this is the high point of my day, and I want everything to go perfect for the 3 hours that we're together. You can probably understand my frustration. But like I said, everything's fixed, and we're all happy. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller Andrew from New York. Hey, Andrew, you're head on.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
That's good. The whole Bill O'Reilly deal with the racism and how many they can't control, the Iraqi people.
Mm-hmm.
I work with a guy like that, and it's no matter how time you beat them over the head with the truth, and they just, you know, they're so resistant that it's just unbelievable. And he'll smile at me, and, you know, he'll say, like, oh, well, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, and then I'll come back and I'll say, somebody's peeing down your back and telling you it's raining. You know, I'm like, get a clue, guy. And he knows what's going on, but...
But
the hatred that he has in them.
But the, and they've got
racism.
Right, they've got that in them. And the other thing is they've got so much invested, I think, Andrew, so much invested in what they have believed so far that it's like it's almost like one of those, you know, the shame that would envelop them if they actually came clean and realized what was being done to them and with them. It would rise to a level of like Japanese ritual suicide, you know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly. It's this foolish pride. It's this foolish pride. And they'll complain. They'll complain about, oh, I can't make it in this economy, and I can only fill up my oil tank, you know, halfway, you know. The money's not there. I'm trying to put my kids through school. And
you're trying to be a decent human being, and you don't do what you probably ought to be doing, and look at the guy and say, brother, this is a self-inflicted wound for you.
Exactly. And it's just like, I don't know. It's like because where I live, it's a Republican bastion, and it's, you know, people are starting, you know, they have this glazed look on their eyes now because they see what's happening, and they can't help but to see it because they're filling it in their pocketbooks.
Yeah.
You know, and they see their taxes going up, and they're not getting anything for it. You know, they're not seeing any benefit. Nothing's going back into the infrastructure or to the programs, and they're saying, like, you know, well, my school taxes are going up. And I'm like, hey, it's a tax shift. You know,
yeah.
Bush administration, you know, they're not collecting enough tax money on the federal end, so, you know, they're pushing the burden towards on the states.
Right. It's you know what rolls downhill.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, Reaganomics, you know, that trickle-down economics. And, you know, it's just they're feeling the pinch now, and a lot of them are mortgaged to the hilt.
Yeah.
You know, they took out these refis and these home equity loans and, you know, now the real estate market up here is starting to, you know, like, basically starting to static and level out, and it's starting to, you know, go down. They're not, their homes aren't worth as much because it's a buyer's market now.
Yeah.
So it's like,
and the mortgage holder doesn't,
a lot of that foolish pride.
Yeah.
And that bigotry and foolish pride, and they just do not want to see that, you know, hey, this guy's no good, you know. This Republican-controlled Congress and executive branch.
Andrew, let me just ask. You mentioned you live in a bastion of Republicanism. Who is your congressman?
Representative Sue Kelly.
Sue Kelly, because I've got a story here. I keep seeing, with regard to this Dubai ports business,
mm-hmm.
I keep seeing just name after name, and it always says, New York Republican Congresswoman so-and-so. And in let's see, one article, it was Peter King.
Yeah.
Another article, Vito Fisella. You know, Vito Fisella says, well, I think somebody dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Information should have flowed more freely and more quickly up into the White House. I think it's been mishandled in terms of coming forward with adequate information.
Yes.
You know, that's just hooey.
Exactly. It's hooey. It's so secretive. And now I read an article where they're like classifying documents that were unclassified from years ago.
Yeah, they've reclassified something on the order of either 55,000 or 550,000 documents have been reclassified by the CIA.
Yeah, it's like, why? You know, it's like, what's, you know, and that just goes to show you how corrupt they are. And you know, how they're not good for democracy. They're not trying to practice democracy.
No,
they're trying to practice a dictatorship. And,
well, yeah, or plutocracy, or you know, what's Jim Hightower call it?
Or whatever.
Yeah, I think Jim Hightower calls it kleptocracy. You know, the kleptomaniacs are in charge. And that's what, you know, that's why, Andrew, I keep coming back to this little theory that I've been sort of talking out on the air for the last few nights. These guys are street punks.
Yeah, that's all they are. It's nothing but common street thugs. Because it's like this. If these guys weren't born into lives of privilege, they were born in a ghetto, or, you know, they were just an average Joe,
yeah,
they would be the very ones out there robbing you on the street.
Oh, sure they would. I mean,
7-Eleven.
From the Bush family on down. I mean, do you think that Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld have ever sat down to a bowl of brown beans and cornbread?
No.
and been glad and been damn glad to have them, you know?
Never. And that's, and that just goes to show that it's in their nature. That's, it's in their DNA. They're just thugs. And they're just thugs with money.
And I'm probably going to step on some toes here, and I don't mean to, but this is one of the reasons that I have problems with all the really high, I'm talking about the highfalutin conspiracy theories about what the Bush administration has and hasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys, this is the gang that, I mean, now that Dick Cheney did what Dick Cheney did, this literally is the gang that can't shoot straight.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't manage, they can't save people in a hurricane. They can't look at a class 3 level levee and realize that it's not going to last through a class 5 hurricane or a class 4. They can't, you know, they can't keep jobs in America. A war that they started by their own choice, they can't win.
Yep.
So it makes it hard for me to look at them as a bunch of evil geniuses. We were all lured into that, Andrew. But what they are is punks.
Yes, that's all they are, is common street thugs. They're hoodlums.
Yeah.
And it amazes me how we're trying to wage a war in Iraq, okay? And America's military right now is like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Yeah, we have a lot of nukes. You know?
Yeah, well, we got a lot of things that go bang, but you know what? Somebody's got to be behind the things that go bang.
Exactly. Exactly. And we're financing, the Chinese are financing our war. Every time he asks for more money for the war in Iraq and the war on terror, it's like, hey, who's paying for that? The Chinese are paying for it.
Yeah, they are.
They're putting us the money.
You know, I had an email from somebody with the story I started the show with, Andrew. Somebody said somebody needs to tell George that GE is 50% internationally owned now.
Yeah, that's the size of it.
You know, it doesn't, you know, so it's not, you know, all this business about, well, you know, when the Indians are going to buy washing machines and televisions. Well, we don't make washing machines and televisions anymore.
We don't make anything now. It's a shame. It's just a shame. And there's no ingenuity. I mean, we're wasting all our good minds in this country. International minds don't want to come over here. If they do come over here, they'll come over here for the schooling, and then they'll go away. They'll go back to their, you know, countries that they came from, because there's no jobs here, because there's no manufacturing.
Well, the thing is, if they came here, they got their education, and then they got a job here, they'd wind up going back home anyway when the job got outsourced.
Exactly. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know what kind of zero-sum game they're playing, but...
I don't think that's the point, Andrew. I don't think they know either.
Yeah, and I don't understand it.
They're flat. They are probably, when you get right down to it, they are probably more hopeless than I was running around trying to figure out why the dadgum telephone didn't work. And I was pretty hopeless.
Well, that was some good bumper music you were playing there.
Hey, Andrew, so good to hear from you, and I hope we will again.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you take care now.
Yep, you too.
Bye. Love first-time callers. I wish I had something to send out to you guys just as a, you know, a memento of our appreciation.
We're working on that.
But we're working on that. And you know what? You can always go to the archives at whiterosesociety.org and hear your first-time call. And you know what's amazing? People are like, you know, they talk to me via email and say, well, you know, I don't want to call in. I'm nervous. You know, I'm afraid I'd embarrass. And I have yet to hear a person truly embarrass themselves on the air. That's another part of the big the big retraining in America. We're afraid to speak up because we might embarrass ourselves. I saw the study many, many years ago that was done by Toastmasters or somebody, and they asked people, you know, this huge random sampling of individuals. They asked them, "What do you fear most?" And they worked it into a top 10. Number 3 was death. 2 was the dentist. And number 1 was speaking in public. Now, once upon a time, Andrew touched on the fact that we're dumbing down our children through our educational system, and we are. We most assuredly are. But the thing is, the other side, the right wingers complain about this too. But they think that we're going to make our educational system better if everybody has to memorize Joshua 6:13. Okay, I have no idea what Joshua 6:13 is. But I mean, you get my point. But we are dumbing down our children for some reason or another. Public speaking, even as recent as when I was in high school, and I graduated from high school in 1981, public speaking was still taught. Debate was taught. Forensic speech was taught. Interpretation of literature. Interpretation of poetry. Extemporaneous speaking. After dinner speaking. Theater. And it's important. I knew a guy who went to another high school who had a very enlightened football coach. And his football coach insisted that his football players who had any talent whatsoever, that at some point in their high school career, they had to take a speech class. Because his theory was, down the road, you will be more attractive to a college or to a pro team or something if when the guy puts the mic in front of your face, you say something besides, well, you know, I just want to be able to help the team and hope I can do a good job every day. And that if you could speak articulately, it would be of benefit to you. When my parents went to school, oh, God, not nostalgia time, Bob. Yeah, no, when my parents went to school, they memorized things. Apparently, memorization is bad, 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 bad in the schools anymore. You know what? We found out something somewhere along the way. Memorization's not bad, especially when you're asking little children to memorize things. And I'll extend the olive branch here, even at the risk of drawing back a bloody stump. It's a good thing to memorize things, even if you're memorizing Bible verses, because it hardwires the brain in a different way. It hardwires the brain in a better way. Because when you memorize all of this stuff, it does something inside your head that makes you better able to formulate ideas on an extemporaneous basis. It is important. But you know what? In a television culture, we don't need public speaking. In a television culture, we don't need to be able to stand in front of a crowd. And you know what? It's especially handy to have a populace, a citizenry that can't stand up and complain at, you know, whether it's a city council meeting, a school board meeting, whether you're standing up with a bull, you know, with a bullhorn in front of your mouth. The people that rule you would like it very much if you were scared to death to do that. You see what I mean? Let's go back to the phones. Rick is back with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
And we actually get to talk this time.
Yeah, man. Good job. You got her going. I just want to say hi. It was Andrew, wasn't it, in
yeah.
New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi, Andrew. Welcome aboard. I mean, this show is growing at such a pace. I mean, I listened for months and months and months, and I've seen this steady progression of it, just the show getting more and more people involved and just reaching everywhere. And I have such high hopes for your show, and I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to pop big. You're the right man at the right time, Bob.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. I want to see it grow.
Well,
I want to see, you know, I want to see it get exponential, and I think there's a point at which it does become exponential.
Oh, sure. I mean, I don't know what you're doing. Are you just relying on word of mouth or in search engines?
We did a little bit of advertising with Bart Kopp.
That's a good source.
We've got good friends who promote the show over at WD40.com. Shelby, a wonderful human being, picked up the show and plays it in delay. Tonight's show, for instance, will play tomorrow from 3 to 6 p.m. in the afternoon Eastern time at radiopower.org. That's done wonders for us.
Oh, sure. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's where I first heard Tom Hartman, I believe.
And of course, we've got the Mutual Admiration Society of what is now the Head On Radio Network of this show, Fourth Estate Radio, and All Things Reconsidered. And we try to cross-promote that for all we're worth.
And I've heard Mike talk about you, several times.
Yeah, Mike has given us some very good plugs, and I really appreciate that because I get the sense from Mike, and it's something that I share with him, that we can't afford to get too wrapped up in branding on this. If there's a liberal talker out there, I want to know about him because I want to help that guy out too.
Okay, and I'm not going to lead you down this road again like I did last time.
No, that's okay. It's okay.
All righty. I just wanted to. There's a few things I wanted to talk to you about as well, and one of them is I wanted to tell the Republicans there is some good news for you freepers. Okay.
Okay.
This evening they launched yet another test missile from Alaska.
Oh no!
And it made it. It made it.
T- to where?
If I remember correctly, it soared across the Pacific Ocean and towards California and Mexico or something. Where it landed, I'm not entirely sure. I don't remember. But it did touch down, and it didn't kill anybody. Unfortunately, once again, the interceptor did not work. So staying in true form, you're 50% right again.
Okay, so the missile that made it was the missile that wasn't supposed to make it.
Exactly. And the other one just couldn't get off the launching pad.
Well, you know, the problem that we had with the first missile, Rick, was the fact that they didn't do what they were doing before. You know, they were putting a homing beacon on them before.
Well, yeah.
And if we could just convince, Kim Jong-il or, you know, here's a homing beacon, you know, we're all playing by Marcus of Queensberry rules here. You have to put the homing beacon on your little nuclear warhead, okay?
Of course, it wouldn't help us because, you know...
We can't get the interceptor missile off the ground.
There was transponders on all those 9/11 flights, and that didn't matter.
Well, that's true, too.
You know, so what are you going to do? But anyway, there's that. So congratulations, Republicans. Once again, you're doing 50% well. Okay.
You're not quite above average yet.
Yeah, but I love that consistency. You know, they only get it wrong half the time.
Well, you know, even a stopped clock is right twice a day.
Yeah. But there's something. Did you happen to see, they were doing a replay of those Katrina hearings today. Did you happen to catch any of those?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was brushing by it. I was doing a lot of different things. But Coleman pops up, and it just occurred to me that Coleman is like the poster child for the entire Republican administration and everybody involved with it.
I thought he was the poster child for dropped on his head at birth.
Oh, yeah. Who dropped a baby? Yeah. Who dropped a baby?
Who dropped little Norman?
Yeah. But, he is. He's such a weak little man. And I don't even mean in stature. I mean in character. He's just that perfect representation of everything about the Bush administration, of people who have power, who are in positions that neither deserve it or know what to do with it. Certainly they don't know how to do anything with it other than benefit themselves. I just thought about every one of these people that come on the TV and start talking and lying and manipulating. It reminded me of these guys. You were talking about punks.
Yeah.
And them just being dumb punks. I personally don't think they're dumb punks in that sense. I think they do have a level of constructive thought, and that is to screw every American as much as they can, as often as they can, and get as much out of it as they can.
Right, for the maximum amount of greed-infested profit.
Yeah, and they're all like that. And they remind me of the punks on the playground that want your lunch money when you're a kid.
Yeah, they're not just going to hit you for the fun of it. They're going to hit you and rob you.
Yeah, but they'll all be in that little pack, you know, hiding behind the big tough guy that by birth that just happened to be 6 foot tall in the first grade.
Yeah.
You know, and
5 o'clock shadow by second.
Yeah, you know, and it's just they're all just a part of that gang. But if you take down that top one, they all fall to pieces. I mean, you know yourself, if we get the Congress back and we start having hearings, these people like Coleman are going to be Tweety birds. They'll give up everybody and everything to save themselves.
Oh, sure.
And it'd be the perfect representation of them punks on a playground. Because you know yourself, and I know you've been there. You pop the big guy in the nose, and the rest of them run home to mommy.
Yeah, I mean, they don't back him up, because you might hit them, too.
That's right. And they're only there for the free ride. Because, they're punks. So it was wonderful to see Coleman just being his low-life self. And just illustrate.
Was this the one where he tried to crawl all over Brownie?
It could be, but I was at the part of the hearings that I had not seen, and I know it was a replay.
Well, because I remember that. I wish I'd had the sound of it on that particular day, Rick, because that he tried getting tough with Mike Brown. I mean, you know, when you can't get tough with Brownie.
I know, but he was more...
But Brownie ate him alive. He said,
I know, and he was dealing with Chernoff, I think it was, at the time.
Ah, okay.
And then he was busy licking his boots and trying to give this half-baked, very low-key admonishment about how Chernoff should have known that Brownie wasn't fit. And then Chernoff started going, like, oh, I know. I started having, as things unfolded, I said, he's over his head and all this stuff. So, they were busy playing that scapegoat, good cop, bad cop routine. And it was so transparent. I just enjoyed seeing it. I was hoping Galloway would come in and just stomp him again. Just come in and stomp that boy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that was kind of fun to watch. I'll tell you what, Rick.
The video, I watch it often.
Yeah, we're gonna knock off here and take our bottom of the hour break. But thank you so much.
Quickly,
yeah, go ahead.
Very quickly, I need you to get a hold of some recently separated veterans, and I'll tell you why. I want you to put them on the show, and I want you to interview them. Because I want to know what they can tell us about what the current mentality of the military is right now and what they would do if they were ordered to contain, imprison, and shoot on their fellow Americans. I think this is a show that needs to be done, and I think you could do it. Because we need to hear from these guys. I think other people would like to know as well where we stand with our military. Are they going to stand with the Constitution and Americans? Or would they go along with this? And I'd love to hear you do a show.
Well, I'll try to maybe get hold of somebody from IAVA, and maybe we can get somebody on the show to talk about that issue.
I would really appreciate it, Bob.
All right, good thing. Great idea. Thanks so much.
All right, bye now. Good talking to you, Bob. See ya.
Take care.
All right, bye.
And listen, this is kind of the shameless portion of the program. Rick was asking how it is we're growing the show. More than anything else, this show is growing by word of mouth. I get a lot of emails saying, you know, so-and-so told me about this. I could have an advertising budget the likes of being unimaginable. But the good word of one human being to another is still, in America, the best advertising a person can get. If you're on hold, please stick with us. We're going to take a quick break. A little bit of ice for the orange soda. You know how it goes. This is Head On. And, well, I'm Bob Kincaid.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon.
Oh, yes.
Okay, downhill to 10 o'clock. Let's go straight back to the phones. Fritz has been waiting. Hey, Fritz.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm okay, Bob. How are you?
I'm holding up, I think.
It's been too long.
It has been. Been doing all right?
Yeah, I'm hanging in, you know. You know, life's tough and stressful sometimes. It's been a stressful week, as I told Agnes, but I made it through almost.
Yeah, almost there.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you, I'm really, really happy to see that you're getting all these first-time callers, my man.
It's very exciting, Fritz.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. I really believe this thing is beginning to take off. And when
I hope so, because we need you, Bob. We need as much as we can get. And, you know, your point about facilitating it for other, you know, for other liberal talk radio, everybody's really got to hang together at this point.
I believe that's sort of the sine qua non of the whole process. That's why through Ben Birch's good offices at WhiteRoseSociety.org and anything we can do here, we're reaching out trying to find people that want the outlet.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this thing will just grow and grow and grow.
Me too. We're hitting it again. Remember the last time I was making dinner? We're hitting it right off the clock again. I'm cooking right now. But I just wanted to. I also wanted to comment on your man in Great Britain. His name is Andrew, I think.
Yeah, Andy.
Andy, if you're listening, it's great when you get on. We love listening to you. Because having a perspective from across the pond is a very valuable thing, I think.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and Andy emails quite frequently as well, and I mentioned the idea last night, Fritz, of creating that front porch dialogue, and I've still got to work a few of the bugs out, but Andy wrote and said he wanted to be part of that when we make it happen as well. So, you know, I think having me and two or three or four other people on the line at the same time all chatting together could be really, really fun.
Oh, it could be a great idea, particularly if someone from across the pond and someone on this side are involved.
Right, exactly. And then the thing is, just about everybody I talk to on this program would be capable of carrying on a civil conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
With multiple people.
You have neither cretins nor uncivil jerks on this program. I mean, there's lots of good people that call. I just wanted to add one perspective to this poor thing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of angry at myself because obviously somewhere, I guess it probably was in the Reagan era, I was sleeping. Because I remember back when I was a kid, and that even goes into my teenage years when I was still in New York, you know, going up 8th Avenue and passing between West 40th and West 41st Street, the Port Authority bus terminal. Mm-hmm. You know, and right out there in front, it says the Port of New York Authority. And then at some point, they changed the sign to the Port of New York, New Jersey Authority. And I'm always assuming that it was the state government of the two states that ran the Port of New York Authority.
It's a rational assumption to make, Fritz.
Yeah, and at some point, they slipped privatization under us.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been in the Reagan era. I don't even know when, and I'm angry at myself for letting that slip by me without noticing.
Well, I think a lot of people are feeling that anger, Fritz. And
I think so, Bob.
I can't see it. I mean, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive. I'll admit when I'm wrong. I don't see this being something that happened during the Clinton administration. It smells like Reaganomics to me. You know, the whole selling America by the pound thing. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it does feel like late '80s to me, particularly when he was kind of asleep at the wheel because his brain was going and they were running the show. You know, George the First was out there doing it.
Yeah, both front feet in the trough. Yeah, when they had both front feet in the trough and were just going absolutely, absolutely wild.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's when it happened.
And you know, it's funny because last night, Fritz, and I don't want you scorching your dinner or anything, but I asked our friend John Fox from Australia if that had gone down there, and I was talking to him, and lo and behold, I got a link back from him. The Port of Adelaide.
Yeah.
In Australia, Dubai Ports World.
Oh my God. This is awful, you know? And the most awful thing about this, again, I know this whole Dubai thing is the whole privatization thing is the thing we have to be wary of because they're putting money in their pockets, they're enriching themselves. This is about greed. Remember, everybody, do not forget the slogan that greed kills.
Yeah.
You know, that has been our slogan on this show, and I think it should remain our slogan. These people are greedy.
Well, they are, and you know, now how much more information do we need? You know, George Bush says, you know, he still says, you know, my government will make sure that everything's okay. I watched the hearings today, Fritz. I watched this undersecretary and that deputy undersecretary and the other guy all paraded before Congress, and you know, we vetted the hell out of this deal. I mean, we're telling you, it's good for you. And they don't seem to get it. There's a complete disconnect, Fritz, but it's not racist and it's not xenophobic. It's the idea that we are well and truly screwed when we reach that day when there's stuff that we can't do on our own country in our own country for ourselves.
I know. It really sickens me, Bob. It really does.
You know,
and that's the state of the society now. You know, I mean, we've outsourced everything. We don't make anything, and now we can't even take care of our own harbors. It's pitiful, is what it is.
It's embarrassing.
I feel terrible about it.
Yeah, it's pitiful. It's embarrassing. You know, you know between 40th and 41st. You know, New York Port Authority, the Manhattan cruise ship pier.
Yeah,
is part
exactly.
of this process.
I know.
The Newark.
I was there so many times. I loved that place when I was a kid. I used to see people off to Europe and, you know, remember them coming in on the Andrea Doria before it sunk.
Oh, my.
I have great memories of that place.
And, you know, it's the Newark container ship port.
Yeah.
I mean, this is nothing but trouble for us, Fritz.
You know, Bob. You know, and I want to say to the NSA people who are listening, I am still proud to be an American, but I was really proud to be an American back in those days when we could take care of ourselves. And I am less proud now because we don't take care of ourselves. That's the point.
Yeah.
We should be able to do better. We're a smart society, we're a strong society, but we're doing all these stupid things.
It's pathetic. Fritz, get back to dinner, but I sure do appreciate it. I missed hearing from you. We worry, you know, about our friends when we don't hear from them for a while. You take care.
It's great to talk to you, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, great.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And quickly to our friend Sue in the United Kingdom. Hey, Sue, you're head on.
Oh, hi, Bob.
How are you?
Sorry. Yeah, not too bad. I've been a bit down.
I'm sorry.
I made the mistake of going and looking at those... the latest stuff from Abbey Grave.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I deliberately backed off. And it was only tonight that I was listening, and I thought, no. And it was when the chap that came on just now from Panama.
Panama City?
When he asked about Americans firing on fellow Americans in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been in my mind now for a long time. It was way back last year, and I was following a link, and I found this thing where they said that they did a survey of American servicemen, and they were asked about firing on fellow American citizens.
Really?
And only 2% said that they would.
Well, I would
have... Now, that is the best reason that they've got to keep those lads in Iraq and not have them come back. Because those men that are over there are men that would fight for their country.
Go ahead, please.
And that's been on my mind since the end of last year. And I kept thinking, oh, you know, conspiracy. But I remember I was following a link, and it was from, God, the project for the old American.
Right, old America.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, oldamericancentury.org, I think is what it's called.
It's the old place in that I followed a link because I was looking up on the 14 points of fascism, and I followed these links. And you know how on the net you follow links and you go off here and you go off there and then you forget how you got there. And of course, and I didn't bookmark the page, but it was in. That they'd done a survey, they surveyed American soldiers, they polled American soldiers, I don't know when it was, but only 2% said that they would fire.
Well, that gives us...
Those are your Republican psychopaths, aren't they?
Well, I think those are people who would fire on anyone they were...
That's what I mean, yeah. You know, because to be in the military, I mean, I was in the military myself years back. As soon as I was old enough, I went off and joined the army for 3 years. And there's very very special people. You get certain amount of people that can kill and live with it. Now, a certain percentage of those are just psychopaths. There's only 1% of men that can actually kill as a job and just carry on normally.
That's and think nothing of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that do it as a job, but there are a percentage that do it because they enjoy it.
Well, you know, I've got a story here, Sue. It's from today. It's from the Boston Globe. The headline is Iraq vet accused of stabbing wife 71 times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we run a terrible risk with what we have done to our military here. And you know, you're going to see it over in the UK, too.
Oh, good God, yes. I mean, I had it when my husband came back. I mean, I was in the army myself for 3 years. I married a civilian. 2 months later, he joined the army. And, you know, so I spent a lot of time as an army wife. And I've dealt with a lot of people that, you know, when marriages have had that problem, and I had it myself, I nearly got killed.
Oh, my God.
You know, it does, I mean, and it's something I shut out of my mind. My little girl, well, she's not little now, but we were down, going past the military hospital, and I was saying, oh, there's the Louis Margaret, the maternity hospital where I had David.
Oh.
And then we went past the other hospital. She said, what's that? I said, oh, that's the Cambridge Hospital. Oh, have you been in there, Mum? And I went, no, I haven't. And suddenly it hit me. And I thought, what am I saying? I was in there. I was in there for 2 days. I couldn't walk.
Oh my
you know,
God.
I've been thrown down the stairs. Mm. So, yes, I know what's going to happen. You know, I talk regularly online to men that I've known. I've got a lot of friends in the army. I talk to men in the middle of the night. That's why I'm up so late sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because they can't sleep. You know, they need people to talk to.
And the thing is, we treat people, I don't know how to address it, Sue, but we've got to stop this business of treating people like they're expendable.
Well, all of these people that say support the troops and, oh, if you want to bring them home, you're not supporting the troops. They're looking at it totally the wrong way. They've got some pie-in-the-sky view of it.
Mm-hmm.
The way that a people of a country support their troops is to make sure their damn government doesn't use their troops for profit-making.
Well, exactly. And, you know, you support the troops by making sure that your government doesn't send them into stupid, greed-infested, hateful little situations that are going to make these things bad. I mean,
and this is it. And I'm against the death penalty, but I think Tony Blair should hang for what he's done to our lads. I really think he should.
Well, at the very least, he should be in the dock in The Hague. And you know, and at least, Sue, you have that possibility in the United Kingdom. We don't have that possibility here. The most that we can hope for is that we impeach George Bush and send him back to Crawford, Texas.
Don't you still have the death penalty for treason?
I don't think I'm even allowed to say whether we do or not, Sue.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm a foreigner. What do I know?
Sue, good to talk to you. I've got one more caller, and I want to make sure that they get on as well.
Oh, but I just wanted you to know about that poll.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's cause for a little bit of hope.
Well, yeah, because the people, you know, you've got a lot of good lads over there, and they're dying for nothing.
Yeah.
For nothing.
And
they don't want them to come home.
And they're coming home broken. I mean, this kid that he stabbed his wife 71 times. He's 19 years old, Sue. He's 19 years old. He stabbed her 71 times, and then he chopped her up with a meat cleaver after she was dead.
Yeah. Well, look what they're doing over there.
Well, you know, it's easy to do that when you get home, when you've done what goes on over there.
Yeah. You know, they're breaking down barriers in these men. It's not a man's nature to kill. You know, and they take away that, but they can't. They can teach them to kill, but they can't teach them how to live with it after.
They can teach them to kill, but they can't teach them how to live. That's the absolute truth, and that is so elegantly said, Sue.
Well, I'm getting really upset now. So, you know, you get your other caller, but damn the lot of them. That's what I say.
I agree with you.
Lovely to speak to you again.
Always such a pleasure, Sue. Do take care.
Okay, love.
Bye now.
Bye.
I don't want to upset people, but this story, I printed it off, and tears came to my eyes. A young man named Brandon Bear, 19 years old, from Wilkesboro, North Carolina, was recommended for court-martial and charged with premeditated murder and indecent acts related to the mutilation of his wife's remains. He had been sent home from Iraq to recuperate from cuts and internal ear injuries in a grenade attack on his striker brigade unit in Mosul. He was a machine gunner, 1st Brigade, 25th Infantry Division. He killed his wife July the 12th. She was 18 years old. He'd enrolled in treatment programs for anger management and combat stress. He said he was having trouble controlling his anger, and he didn't like his wife going out. A day before she was found dead in the couple's kitchen, he told his rear detachment commander that he was taking a new prescription that made it hard to get up and that he'd missed a treatment. His wife, by the way, his wife's name was... Now, this young man had been in Iraq, and he had seen horrors perpetrated on Iraqi men, Iraqi women, Iraqi children. He stabbed his wife 71 times and hacked her up after with a meat cleaver. His wife's name was Nabila. Nabila. What have we done? Not what did he do, what did we do? And it is as much a fault, don't want to stomp any toes, it is as much a fault of the liberal side as it is of the conservatives. Oh yeah, the conservatives wanted their war. And we marched a couple of times, us liberals, us progressives, us people who don't like to see other people slaughtered. We marched a couple of times, but then we went home. As much as anything else, we let this happen. We let this happen. For what we have done in Iraq and for what we have done to Iraq, the fault lies, the blood overflows on George W. Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condi Rice and Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz and the whole filthy, stinking gang. But you know what? We let it happen, too. There are levels of civil disobedience that we're not engaged in to stop this war. We permitted it to happen. And we must deal with that as some percentage of our national guilt for this crime of war. Let's go back to the phones. Bernie is with us from Oregon. Haven't heard from him in a while either. Hey, Bernie, you're head on.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Everything goes out of my head the minute you say, hey, Bernie, how are you?
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's okay. There's one, I sort of have some general things, but, you know, we listen to the news, the talking heads on TV and the writers in the newspapers who equivocate and wring their hands over, did the president know about this? Did they lie about this? Is this torture or is that not torture? Let's cut to the goddamn chase. Excuse my language.
That's okay.
These people are murderers. They're criminals. And you just said something that got, you know, why did we permit this to happen? I don't know how we stop it, but why are we permitting this president and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and the rest of those scumbags to continue as officers in our government? Why?
I don't know either. I don't know.
And another thing, I sent you an email and you can check this out more thoroughly, but do you know that in the 30 years that the North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese were at war, and while we were there,
They had a water line going into Saigon from out in the country someplace, mm-hmm. which was easily sabotaged by the North Vietnamese. They never touched it. Never in 30 years. In 1991, we carpet bombed Iraq. We destroyed their infrastructure. We destroyed their sewer grid, their electrical grid, their sewer system, and their water system. As a result of that, 1 million-plus Iraqis died. And if someone wants to dispute that, tell them to look up the UNICEF figures.
Oh, no, no, I don't think you're going to get
truth.
Yeah, you're not going to get any dispute, Bernie. And you know, the thing is, that what you talk about, what we did to the Iraqi infrastructure, we were so proud of that war crime that we gave it a name. We called it the Powell Doctrine.
Well, you know, I really recommend you read this. The reaction to a terrorist attack, our reaction to this terrorist attack on our country was so misguided.
And it was evil, too. I mean, you talk, Bernie, you talk about these questions, you know, and you're so right about the talking heads and the blabber heads, the yammer heads. You know, is this torture? Is this a war crime? Did he lie? You know, I got news for him. When you're asking that question, the answer is yes.
Why doesn't somebody grow some, you know what?
Yeah.
Why don't they get some sand in their.
Yeah, a little bit of starch.
Yeah, a little grit, because you know what? I'm not the bravest guy in the world, but you know what, Bob? If I was, I would risk my job to see that this was stopped. And I'll say another thing. I'm not going to stand here and take this for a whole much lot longer, and there's a lot of people like me. I don't know what's going to happen, but we are not going to sit here anymore.
Well, you know, Bernie, we've talked about an idea. And you know, it's a start. This idea of a silent sit-down on Good Friday, March the 14th at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Find yourself a federal building. If it's you by yourself, that's fine. If it's 100 people, fine. Whatever. But sit. No signs, no banners, no banging on pots and pans, no red flags, black flags, no face masks, no nothing. Just wear, you know, wear whatever you got on and go and sit down and say not a word.
That's a good idea. I'll bring that up with some of the people I know here.
Please share that out. I think it's it was another one of your brother Oregonians that came up with it.
Who's that?
It was a fellow named Art from Eugene.
I don't know who that is.
He's from time to time he is a resident of the Tom Hartman chat room.
Oh, okay.
And I think
I have a lot of regard for.
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant idea.
I think you guys are great. You know, there's a different flavor for each one of you, and I really like you a lot.
Well, I thank you, Bernie. We're just trying to do what comes natural and talk about it in the way that makes the most sense to us. And you know, if I blow a little blood vessel every now and then, that's because sometimes I get to a point where I can't help it anymore.
I don't know how you do it, because. You know what someone said to me the other day? They said, Bernie, someone told me, you aren't, they said, Bernie's not happy unless he's angry.
But that's not true. It's not true of you. It's not true of me. But you know what?
No.
I can't sit around and walk around with a smile on my face all the time. If I did that, if you did that, if we did that, Bernie, there would be something badly wrong with us. There are people walking around with a smile on their face all the time. They're the other side. They're the people that voted for George Bush and think that everything is hunky dory. It amazes me that there's 40% of the people of the United States that still think this guy's doing an okay job.
Well, do you ever read any of Sean Hannity, whatever he writes or talks about? I do that sometimes just to see what they're doing.
Yeah, I peep through the keyhole once in a while too.
I don't know why are they doing this? They
hate America. I mean, you know, they said that about us, but these people really do, Bernie.
Donald Rumsfeld, George Bush, Dick Cheney, Richard Pearl, Thief, Wolfowitz are all traitors to America. You know, these right-wingers talk about loyalty to George Bush. The Constitution doesn't talk about loyalty to a a president or an administration. They talk about loyalty to your country.
And to your constitution.
I'm sorry, I'm talking too loud.
No, that's okay, Bernie. You're doing fine. But yeah, it's
I'm back and forth.
No, you join the military. You swear an oath to the Constitution.
That's right.
You know, you don't.
I was in the service. By the way.
Really?
I didn't have to fight anywhere, and I'm so glad I didn't. And by the way, for the soldier did what he did.
Yeah.